Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison as we build up to England's five-match T20 series against the West Indies, which is live and exclusive here on TalkSport 2. We'll hear exclusively from England captain Owen Morgan and West Indies all-rounder and former captain Jason Holder. And we'll be joined live from Barbados by England fast bowler David Payne. As well as that, we'll be joined by the guys from the Caribbean Cricket Podcast to discuss how the hosts are preparing for the series. So, as always, there's plenty to fit in over the next hour. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. I mean, it's a new-look squad for England. We're used to seeing that. I mean, we'll never, I think, have the unprecedented situation where England replace an entire squad as they did before the Pakistan ODIs in the summer. But there's some exciting names, three who could make their debuts, Phil Salt, George Garton and David Payne. We'll be speaking to David a little bit later on. Four left-armers in the squad. Maybe that's a subject that we can bring up with him. But you and I share a mutual excitement for Phil Salt. He's been, I don't know whether due a debut is the right way to put it, but he's certainly worth one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's nice to see that players who have done well in the system coming through, i.e. the T20 Blast, are getting rewarded with call-ups. Garton, I quite like. I've enjoyed watching him in franchise stuff. So I'll be intrigued to see how he goes that one step up, because I think it looks as though he's going to play. Yeah, David Payne, who has an experienced cricketer, who's played a lot of cricket, done fantastically well. And Gloucester have been very, very good in the Blast. I know they're not one of the sort of household counties, but when it comes to the longer format of the game. But in the Blast, they have been very, very good and competitive in a number of years now in white ball cricket. And David Payne has done fantastically well for them. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in and where he gets to go. But you're right. I think Phil Salt has somebody who has knocked on the door for the white ball team for a while. And it's difficult to get into this white ball side. And it's interesting that it doesn't look as though he's going to play in his natural place. We look at the warm-up game that have just been played. Tom Banton opened the batting and Phil Salt came in at number six. So whether there's a change of role for Phil Salt or they're just trying to get everybody a game and just fit them in anywhere, I'm not so sure. But I'd like to see Salt get a game because I think he's knocked on the door for a long time now. And I think he deserves his chance.
I'm going to ask you about Sam Billings. He posted a picture on Twitter looking out of his aeroplane window, describing his journey to get from Tasmania to Barbados. It was Hobart, Sydney, Miami, Los Angeles, London, the moon. I can't even remember it. I mean, just unbelievable journey. And he's going to keep in all five games by the looks of it.
Yeah, and it's good for him as well. The one thing about Sam, he has travelled the world. He's not caused any fuss. He's not come out in the press and said, I deserve my chance when things haven't gone so well for England. He seems to have been a good guy to have around. Not too dissimilar to the coach when he first started, Paul Collingwood, when he first started in the England setup in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s. it was quite a strong side to get into. So he struggled to get in when he was first around, because bear in mind, I think Colley was first talked about playing for England in 2000, I think it was, when he made his one day debut. He didn't play international cricket until a lot later than that. So a little bit like Colley, he was a good bloke to have in a dressing room, good tourist, everything that goes with it. And it seems that Sam's fallen into that category. But now he's going to get his chance with Joss and Johnny not being there. You know, he's gone via the moon, the stars in everywhere, which way, but loose on an aeroplane. He's cracked up some air miles. He's probably got more air miles than you managed, to be fair. But he's managed to get himself in a position to hopefully stake a claim in both formats. This is a big chance for Sam, and I hope he takes it. I really do. There was positive signs in his movements when he was in Test match cricket. I like the wee positivity. He was trying to be a little bit more positive. He wasn't too bad in defence against a fantastic bowling attack in Australia. But now he's going to get his chance in white ball cricket. And I just wonder, with that Phil Salt, is Sam Billings going to go in at number one instead of Tom Banton, who I think kept yesterday? Or will he fit in that middle order at number six, and Tom Banton, you know, just goes in as an opening batsman? So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in. But I hope he takes his chance, because, you know, sometimes these good guys that go around the world and, you know, fits in nicely in the dressing room, doesn't always get their rewards. But fingers crossed for Sam, he does.
What about your old mate Colley making his first appearance as head coach? And I don't mean this in any way disrespectfully, but how do you see his role? Because, I mean, Owen Morgan's, he runs the ship. He's the man behind the wheel. He makes the decisions. I would imagine that he'll be selecting the starting 11s as well. So what does Colley do? To report to Owen Morgan's hotel room and say, what would you like me to do, skipper?
Yeah, possibly, quite possibly. But that seems to be a well-run machine. There's a lot come out of Owen Morgan's interview with Scott Taylor in TalkSport last week. And he is the man in charge, and rightly so, because he's earned the right to have his final say in everything that goes on in that group. I actually think this is a very, very good match. You know, when you talk about matchups, I think this is a very good matchup, this England duo of Morgan and Collingwood. I think they both get on very, very well. Talking about split coaches, I don't see anybody other than Colley to take the one-day side. And people will say, oh, well, you will say that because he's your mate. I can put it out there. I didn't speak to Colley for a number of years. Me and Colley didn't have the best relationship when we come to playing, because we had different ideas on how the game was played. But I respect the guy like you'd not believe, because of the amount of cricket we've played together, you know, the family crossovers that we've had in each other's, you know, in each other's spaces over the course of the last 25 years. We had a different opinion on the way the game was played, but it never clouded my judgment that one day Paul Collingwood will be a fantastic coach. And he is a good coach, and I think he will coach this one-day side going forward. I would urge them to give him the job going forward. If they're going to split it and Silverwood goes or Silverwood stays, I think the matchup between Morgan and Collingwood is a very, very good combination. And I think long-term, going forward, there's no way Owen Morgan is going to take the England cricket coach. I don't think he's got too many bigger fish to fry from that point of view. But I think when Morgan goes in a year or 2 years' time, depending on how long he wants to go for, I think a Butler or a Stokes combination with Collingwood would work very, very well as well. So while the one-day ship is sailing rightly with the wind and a good lick, I think this is a nice combination, along with Triscothic, who's in there as well. I think there's quite a good dynamic between Morgan, Collingwood, Triscothic, and I think Anthony McGrath's there as well. So I like this coaching unit, and I think it's got mileage.
All right, let's remind ourselves what Owen Morgan said about working with this new group of players.
It's unbelievably exciting. As a white ball group, we've gone on tours and played in series at home where we haven't had our full strength side available. That's been a constant theme for a number of years now. Obviously, test matches take priority and always do. So going through the exercise of giving younger guys opportunity is a really exciting time for us, because when we've tried it in the past and given the unbelievable skill level that guys have coming through county cricket into the 100, playing in franchise tournaments around the world, they're now coming into our team ready to play international cricket. So I'm excited about seeing some of the new players who have come into the squad potentially get opportunities over the course of the five games and hopefully winning a series as well.
That was England captain Owen Morgan. Looking forward to working with a new group of players. Although I have to say, Harmy, in recent years and recent tours, the England captain does have a habit of sticking to what he knows and what he likes. And, you know, there's a few players in squads in recent years that have done nothing more than warm the bench. So he's got a lot of players to get through.
Yeah, it's as if the selectors have given him a group of players and he's only picking the ones he wants. That's been the case in South Africa. I think, was it 2019 or 2020 when I think the ODIs got cancelled and we were expecting 16 players. We're going to have a look at these players in three games. And he picked the same 11 three times in a row. So if you do miss out on Saturday night, you might be worried that you might not get a gig in this trip. But I hope not on this case because of the likes of Butler and Stokes and Bairstow and Wood. They're missing. Wokes is missing from a 2020 squad. With all them missing, I'd like to think Owen Morgan might and Paul Collingwood might try and get as many players at least one game in they possibly can to sample the atmosphere of a T20 international. And the one thing that's going to be, the atmosphere will be amazing in Barbados. So I don't think they're going to get a better baptism if there is one of their first games than what it would be in Bridgetown, Barbados over the course of the next 12 days.
All right. Finally, let's hear from former captain Jason Holder looking forward to the series.
I think England are to the point where questions are being asked if they could sustain the level of cricket they've been playing. And for us, a lot of questions are being asked if we could get back to, you know, our winning ways and our dominance in terms of T20 cricket. So again, there are two series that I think should be really, really good to watch. Two sides who are looking to make that progression forward and keep building. Even in the T20 format, you know, we're probably in a stage where we're rebuilding, but England is probably, I wouldn't say a full-strength England team, you know, and that may be an opportunity for their guys, but also our guys to really lay their mark down and perform against quality opposition. You know, I think the lineup that they've put out is still a very, very competitive one, and they have some big-name players in their lineup.
West Indies all-rounder and former captain Jason Holder looking forward to the series. And in case you missed it, by the way, England did play a warm-up game against the Barbados President's 11. And Jason Roy scored 100 from 36 balls. It was a fairly young and inexperienced team, but nonetheless, 100 off 36 against anybody is impressive. You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison as we continue to look ahead to England's five-match T20 series against the West Indies, which is live and exclusive here on TalkSport 2. Next up, we'll be joined by the Caribbean Cricket Podcast to discuss how the hosts are preparing for the series.
This is going to be a short and pull the wall. Oh, but the wicket, that's gone into the sunset for six.
Here is Moeen again.
Down the wicket. Oh, that's gone enormous. That's gone straight over the commentary box. It's landed on the roof above us.
We feel they have some very dangerous players and very good players as well. But be careful, we've got to play our best.
Jordan bowls again, and he did a chip. Oh, he caught it! Christopher Jordan has caught a blinder.
This time Morgan is getting a shot ball that he's pulling. Oh, but the wicket, that's a humongous six. Gone! Oh, that was gone. Sold to Owen Morgan.
Hopefully we can continue to grow, continue to get better, get strong as a team, and hopefully continue to be very, very competitive.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison as we continue our build-up to England's five-match T20 series against the West Indies, which is live and exclusive here on TalkSport 2 from Barbados starting this Saturday evening. Delighted to say, as promised in the intro, we're joined by Michelle St. Patrick Hewitt of the Caribbean Cricket Podcast. It's a great listen, by the way. If you're not subscribed, then you should do so. It's entertaining and informative. Michelle, thank you for your time, mate. How's preparations going for the West Indies? Everyone recovered from that Ireland ODI series yet?
I hope they've recovered, but I haven't. But I think the nature of the global cricket calendar is you haven't got that much time to kind of think about what happened before because we're straight into it versus England. So let's hope they're raring to go.
And Michelle, we talk about, you know, that can be unpredictable in the West Indies and the inexperienced group that they've got. Is it a case of they'll turn up Bridgetown Barbados full house against the best team in the world? Are we expecting the proper West Indies to turn up, or is this something that the West Indies are just going to have to put up with and go through?
Do you know what? Because I think we have to remember that the kind of golden generation or T20 golden generation is done now for the West Indies. I think if you lose that many experienced players, yes, they had a bad World Cup, but if you lose that many experienced players all at one time, you have to go through some kind of rebuilding process. And I think in this squad versus England, other than Kieran Pollard and to an extent Jason Holder, you'd actually argue that everybody else in the squad is still fundamentally learning their game at the international level. So versus a powerhouse England team, I'm still calling England powerhouses, shorn of some of their best talent. I think the unpredictable nature of T20 means you'd still expect West Indies to win one game, because that happens in all kind of T20 series. You kind of win a game here and there, but make no mistake, England are the favourites here.
And Phil Simmons has just turned around and said, you know, talking about the regional game, we are the same in England about the Red Bull game. But what is, from a West Indies point of view, what are the need, and who are these young players that are going to change the forecast of West Indies going forward into, you know, the powerhouses that we want them to be? Because world cricket needs a powerful West Indies.
I mean, it certainly does. It's interesting to see England and West Indies going through what effectively is an existential crisis at the same time. And I would say that England will get out of theirs much quicker. Ours has been going on for about 25 years now. England will get out of theirs because at the end of the day, England's is just about priorities and putting the resources in the right places. Fundamentally, I think that's where it boils down to. For the West Indies, I just do not believe we have the resources and financial power to fix it anytime soon. In terms of the youngsters to get behind, I'm going to call some names that everybody should be familiar with by now. Shimron Hetmyer, Nicholas Pooran, even a Brandon King, a Fabian Allen. Jaden Seals has taken cricket by storm with his debut this year. But the issue the West Indies will always have is, I mean, I just called some names, right? Of those names, Fabian Allen has never played a test match. Shimron Hetmyer hasn't played a test match in 2019. Nicholas Pooran has never played a test match. Jaden Seals, how long before he stops playing test matches? So there's always that kind of, you can't talk about the West Indies without thinking about the financial reality and how long we can keep hold of players in the maroon. So it sounds a bit pessimistic to say it, but do we have to, kind of like what England did, England prioritised white ball cricket over red ball cricket. Right now, I'd take West Indies prioritising something over something else if it meant we became good in one format of cricket.
A couple of days ago, we spoke to Jason Holder and he admitted that now he'd turned 30, he was looking to play a little bit more franchise domestic T20 league cricket around the world. He was very polite about it, but he basically said you have to maximise your financial earnings as much as you can. I mean, you know, it's a short lifespan. It seemed like that problem, which existed for a dozen or 15 years, had been resolved. It seemed like the West Indies Cricket Board had come together and said, you know what, we cannot stop these guys earning money and playing around the world. So let's let them do that. And then before big events and big tours, we'll get them all together and we won't penalise them. It all seemed to be pulling together, and it's just beginning to fray around the edges again.
Yeah, you make a good point. And I wrote something, granted it was in blog form, I think it was about 3 years ago. And I said at the time, it's when Shimron Hetmyer was creating a storm across all formats of cricket. I think he'd blazed 100-odd in India, which of course then got the IPL scouts on his back. And I said at the time that I called it the Chris Gayle conundrum. I said that if we don't heed it, we're going to be in the same position again, but with just a different set of players. And arguably, we're here now. We're here now with Pooran and Hetmyer, Fabian Allen, etc. It's not that I don't think... So I'm going to kill a myth here. I do think the players genuinely want to represent West Indies. And I do think they're trying to meet Cricket West Indies halfway. The dilemma is how... I say halfway, but where is halfway? Now, for some of them, halfway is, I'll turn up for the odd bilateral series here and there. For others, it's, I'm going to make myself available whenever you need me. And for some, it's, well, actually, I'll play if I feel like it. And I think if I had to criticise, the issue is that there isn't one coherent viewpoint, not from Cricket West Indies, from all players. And I'd like us to reach a point where every single player is able to say, yes, okay, financial realities. I want to be financially stable. I want to look after my people back home in the Caribbean. But I'd like them to kind of meet us a bit more than halfway at this point. I'd like to see Nicholas Pooran play one test match before his career is done. Just one, just before his career is done.
And you mentioned young Searle, who has took the game by storm. But you look at Dominic Drake, Brandon King. Is this their breakthrough series? Because all eyes are going to be on playing against the best team, one of the best teams in the world, especially in Barbados, where the bright lights, the big city, and you know, the five T20s in a short period of time, you know, it's going to be shown all around the world. What are we expecting from these young guys?
Yeah, most definitely, and arguably in the Caribbean context, and this could cause some consternation from some West Indian listeners, but arguably Barbados versus England, arguably it doesn't get very much bigger than that in kind of the history of West Indies England. I think this is big for old Dean Smith, as you say, so those names you called, the Dominic Drakes, the Romario Shepherds. But to be honest, Harmy, I'm kind of a bit caught in two minds here, because if they have a good series and then we go to India, and if they have a good series there, you know what happens next. So yes, it is big. And I think if they're going to make a name, I mean, old Dean Smith is already making a name for himself, given what he was doing versus Ireland with the bat. So now's the time to shine.
Finally, the International Players Association, FICA, conducted an annual survey amongst professional cricketers around the world. And there was a seminal moment. It might have been last year, it might even have been 2 years ago, when for the first time, the majority of players under 30 were asked about their primary ambition, said an IPL contract, not to play test matches, not to represent my country or my region. It seemed like an irreversible step. And, you know, the scouts' first port of call tends to be the Caribbean. Are you trying to push waves back into the sea? Are you fighting an impossible tide?
It's not going to be a popular answer, but it can't be stopped. It can't be. It can't be, because the financial... Okay, so it's not specifically about England, but let's use the England example. So right now with the England debate, there's that whole thing about class and so on and so forth, right? Not to stereotype or generalize, but in the Caribbean context, for, I don't want to give a percentage, but for some of these players, their beginnings are extremely humble. And if you are offered an extortionate amount of money to work less than test cricket and even ODI cricket, arguably, why would you do it? Why would you go into the field for five? I know it's the pinnacle of the game, but why would you go into the field for 5 days when actually you can financially set yourself up for life by just globetrotting? So I'm not one to criticize what the players are doing. I'm not one to say restraint of trade, but I am, I guess, one to say and appeal to their heartstrings. And say, we know what it is. You've got every right to do what you're doing, but maybe for the betterment of the region, only play some of the tournaments. That's where the difficulty is. But it's such a fine line to cross for people who have come up from humble beginnings.
And is that the board? Did the board have to say that to some of the West Indies players? Or basically the board have to turn around and say, right, we are prepared to play less cricket if you come back to us. So we'll move the goalposts to make sure that you can play in two or three of these franchise tournaments around the world. But we then need you to play for the West Indies when the calendar suits, which is basically we will move the calendar around the franchise. It's a little bit like what New Zealand have done. Mm-hmm. A lot of New Zealand players play all these franchises around the world, and their team are the best team in the world, ranked the best team in the world because they won the World Championship. Is that what the board have got to do, or is there too much arrogance in the board to rebuff and push back against the players?
So I'm going to give the board their due because I think you're 100% correct. And this is why I think we lost a generation of cricketers. That's the reality. Because I think if you go back to 2012 onwards and talk specifically about the DJ Bravos, the Kieran Pollards, the Chris Gayles, when they were in their prime, the board's attitude then, in comparison to the New Zealand board, was to fight the players and make it very much a West Indies or else. So the players took their ball and they went because they had the right to do that. They didn't sign central contracts and they went and played, freelanced around the world in some regards, some more than others. Since about 2019, the board, I think, has gone out of their way to meet these players halfway. Kieran Pollard's the best example. So Pollard's now the captain. And if you look at Pollard's, his freelance priorities, PSL's a good example. So a few years ago, Pollard didn't play the PSL because he had West Indies commitments. And he agreed that as West Indies captain, he will now reduce his commitments on the freelance circuit and make sure that when West Indies needs him, he is always available. Great. But that some would argue Pollard can do that because he's already made it. Yeah. So, of course, he can give up commitments. What if you're Dominic Drakes now or Old Dean Smith, who are starting to get the Bangladesh Premier League deals, the PSL deals? I'm not even talking about IPL. I'm talking about the lesser ones. It's harder for them as they're making their way up through the system than it is for the established players who have been there, done that.
Final question, Michelle, before we let you go. And thanks for your time. It's been great to chat to you. Does it make a difference, do you think, with guys like Desmond Haynes and Rendra Sharwin coming back into West Indies cricket, taking a lead role? Does that have any influence at all?
PR-wise, it does.
That's very honest.
I would argue that being a West Indies selector is one of the hardest jobs in world cricket because no matter what you do, there are going to be media and fans in the region who are going to criticise you if you haven't got a player from their particular island or country. So that's issue number one. Even the great Desmond Haynes is going to get criticised and Ronnie Sarwam. But also, and this again, the parallels with England are so great right now, who have we got to call up anyway? I'm looking at the cupboard and the cupboard is bare. Yes, they can make a difference, but the pool, the talent pool is still the talent pool. So what they're going to have to do, and I wonder if England are going to do the same, do you start to look at players who might not necessarily have the numbers, but you recognise that they've got some kind of intangible that you can work with? But the problem with doing that is that's a risk, and it's a risk that comes with criticism if it doesn't come off. But if your cupboard is bare, what else can you do?
Michelle St. Patrick Hewitt, you tell you what, that was fantastic. Thank you for your time. All we can offer you in exchange is a couple of 10-minute sections of Harmy on your next Caribbean cricket podcast. All right.
Definitely.
He's in Barbados, so he's available.
Is he ready to come out of retirement?
Yeah. You ain't got a shirt big enough. You ain't got a shirt big enough to bring me out of retirement. Trust me, I tell you.
Thank you very much, mate. Thank you, Michelle. Appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Michelle St. Patrick Hewitt from the Caribbean Cricket Podcast. You're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And a reminder, you can hear live and exclusive ball-by-ball commentary of that England T20 series against the West Indies. It all gets underway on Saturday night. Next up, we'll speak live with England fast bowler David Payne. You're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison as we look ahead to England's T20 series against the West Indies, which is live, ball by ball, here on TalkSport 2. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, which is now available, as always, via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. And I'm delighted to say, as promised at the top of the show, we're joined live by David Payne from Barbados. After two long, hard days of trying to get the Wi-Fi working from the beautiful Barbados, and after all, who needs Wi-Fi in Barbados? But David, it's great to have you. Thank you very, very much for your time. All going well? Settled in?
Yeah, all going well. Apart from the Wi-Fi conundrum at the start. No, that's all that's all sorted though. So yeah, settled in, lovely, beautiful place. Really enjoying it.
I mentioned at the top of the show that. That we know Owen Morgan likes a little bit of left arm in his squad, but he's indulging himself with this one, isn't he, with four of you?
He is. I think that was a surprise to most, but actually something I've probably campaigned for a little bit in terms of we always choose the left armer as the point of difference, but actually why can't you have the right armer as the point of difference? And actually, you know, it's nice to have a few left armers. It gives me a lot of guys to pick their brains and learn from as well. So it's it's a really nice group to have.
And the left arm option, it's not as though you get a lot, David, with when you go right arm option. You see, right, you've got four, you know, we've just gone off the back of an Ashes series where we sometimes get criticised for bowling three or four 80-mile-an-hour right arm bowlers. But we've not got three or four left armers the same, have we? You've got Rhys, who's quite tall. Ty Miles a bit skittier. Do you talk to each other about, you know, what different characteristics you've got and how you can use them in this shorter format?
Yeah, so after the warm-up game yesterday, I spoke to Toppers. I thought he bowled a fantastic spell with the new ball. And he was talking about kind of the pace and carrying the pitches. And he thought they were quicker than he expected. And I said, actually, looking at it, though, I think it might have just been because of his height. I said to him, he had the new ball, obviously. But actually, Ben Saki from the other end didn't look quite as bouncy as Toppers had. And as you say, with Toppers with his height, that's just his unique point of difference, I guess. He's saying that it's different for Tamal, probably a bit of extra pace, skiddier. So, yeah, all being left arm, but all having our own characteristics, I guess, and being slightly different.
And we talked about a lot of talk about COVID bubbles, and it must be tough. And, you know, I couldn't even think of being involved in 2 years of a COVID bubble, you know, with my lifestyle when I played. But how hard has it been from a guy that comes in county cricket, then goes into these bubbles, and then comes out of it, you know, when you see the likes of the test and white ball format players who have played, you know, basically 2 years in it. How difficult is it, first and foremost, and how important is it for the guys that are coming in and out to give the group a bit of energy?
Yeah, so I guess for me, I'm probably right at the lower end of the spectrum in terms of bubbles, obviously being predominantly county cricket for me, and then just a couple of bubbles. But it's also found that any bubble has been pretty difficult when you're just confined to a room or whatever it is. But listening to some of these guys' years, what they've had, I can't even imagine some of the 2 weeks quarantine. As I say, I'm lucky enough that I've probably only had to do it for a couple of days or so. Yeah, it's almost lost for words in terms of thinking about how tough it must be for them. And the amount of days and months probably now that they've racked up confined to a hotel room is beyond me. So as you say, then for guys like me coming into this group, someone a new face, hopefully it is refreshing for them, and I can just provide a little bit something different a little bit of energy, someone new, say someone for them to get to know, someone different in the group. And yeah, hopefully that is something different for them. And say the quarantine here wasn't too bad at all this time. So I think the boys are pretty full of energy for this trip.
I heard an interview you did with Sky a couple of days ago, and you were reflecting on the last year or the last 18 months. You know, it's always a big moment, isn't it, when a cricketer turns 30 or is approaching 30. It sounded like you felt there was a fork in the road in your career coming up, or, you know, something needed to happen. And then the entire ODI squad was changed. You were suddenly in the England ODI team, and here you are in Barbados in the T20 squad. You know, it sounds like whatever fork in the road your career took, it was certainly the right one.
No, it definitely was, I'd say. And yeah, last summer was huge for me. I definitely felt a little bit like it was now or never. Felt like I'd been on the fringes for a while. Oh, that's what, you know, that was the hearsay and what I'd been told. And I guess it got to the point where that was almost driving me a little bit mad to, you know, you're just not quite sure how close you are. So to get that call, however means necessary, last summer was huge for me. And as I've said in several interviews, really, it was kind of the spark and the reignition I needed just to know that I am as close as people have been telling me. So I say that boosted me right through for the summer. And then into this winter, it gave me a lot of passion and motivation to hit my winter training hard and believe and hope that this opportunity could arise. And again, when I got this phone call, it was just pure elation to make it to this group. And that's everything I've ever wanted. And now it's on to the next stage and keep going down that fork in the road and just hope that I can put in some good performances and retain a place in this squad.
David, I've talked a lot about the difference between county cricket and international cricket. And until you made that jump, you can't really comprehend what the difference is. Can you just try and explain for somebody who came into international cricket after a long experience, you know, as an experienced player in county cricket, the difference between playing for a county and playing for your country and the sort of level of the mental pressure that you're under? Because when you came in last year, it was a whole new side. It was a new captain. Ben Stokes was captain. What was that like? But the difference between county cricket and international cricket is huge.
Yeah, and like you say, I don't think you can quite comprehend that until you get into the environment. Touch on Stokesy last summer, like you say, he was, I think, amazing with that group in terms of helping a whole new group. You know, a lot of them had been in international environments but not played a huge amount. And Stokesy was fantastic, I think, at settling nerves and welcoming everyone and making that group, you know, feel a real part of being in an England squad and putting an England shirt on and being in that environment. As I say, all the experience I've got in county cricket definitely feels like it helps. But as you say, you step into that England environment and instantly there's something about it that almost broadens your eyes, opens them up, and like, wow, this is what the talk is all about. This is the next level. And I think it's just a case of everything, every part of cricket and everything you do at county cricket just being that little more intense, a little bit more pressure, and everything's heightened. And yes, so I don't think you can quite comprehend it until you're in it. And then you, even just in training sessions, as I say, it's given me so much for me, I guess, to look at my game and see actually there's so much more I can improve on in my game. And I think that was probably the biggest thing. You realise where you're at as a cricketer when you come into these environments. It'll expose you for any little weaknesses you have. Whereas in county cricket, there'll be games probably where you can get away with that. But no, in this environment, it certainly stands out that I think you've really got to be on the top of your game every day.
David, I've got two questions for you. You can take your pick or you can answer them both. How tiresome is the talk that's, after all, been going on about 100 years about players from unfashionable counties not getting the recognition they deserve? Guys like Ian Cobain and Benny Howell playing franchise cricket around the world and being recognised. And do you think it has been a hindrance playing for Gloucester? And secondly, there's talk about combined county 11s playing intense first-class fixtures against the touring teams in June and July. And you've spoken about your ambitions to play Test cricket. That could be a fantastic sort of springboard opportunity to showcase your abilities.
Yeah, definitely. I'll actually be honest, I didn't know about that. I hadn't heard about that. But if that is the case, then that, yeah, that just probably fills me with excitement that the possible opportunities, like you say, that there'd be 11 guys there with an opportunity to challenge themselves against some of the best. And it could just be the springboard you need to get to test cricket. If you say, if I can do well in games like that, then hopefully that might give you the opportunity that you're looking for. And in terms of, yeah, going back to your first question with Gloucestershire, I think if I'm honest, back in the past, on reflection, it probably is in the back of my mind whether Gloucestershire did hold me back, and, you know, not them personally, but me being at Gloucester. And I don't know, that's for everyone's opinion. There'll be people that say that they didn't, and people that say that they did. But I think the most important thing is that now I'm fully believed that it's an open playing field for anyone now with England. And it doesn't matter what county you play for. It's just about performing well and you'll get selected. And I think that was probably one of the big things about for me with my first selection is, you know, knowing that now that has to be the case, that if I can do it from Gloucester, then it means anyone can.
And you mentioned you can do it from Gloucester. I agree. Me and Colly did it from Durham, and we were only a first-class county for 15 years. So you can do it. If you're good enough, you should be able to get selected from anywhere. And if you get selected, Bridgetown, Barbados, the atmosphere is going to be unbelievable. Sampled it many times before. It is a fantastic place to play cricket, especially when things are going your way and the noise and the rooms going, especially late at night. What are you expecting from David Payne himself and also the five-match series as a team?
To be honest, Harmy, I've kind of put my expectations kind of low. I think it's the way I operate. So almost come into the series, the expectation maybe not to play or to get the odd game potentially. It's just the way I've always operate, really, not to put my hopes too high. And I've come into these 2 weeks just to really embrace the occasion, embrace the environment and learn as much as I can as a cricketer for these 2 weeks to help me better my game. And then, as I say, if then an opportunity comes, if Morgs gives me the tap and says you're playing, then then it's just a case of going out and doing what I've done for the last 10 years, really, and rely on that experience and go and enjoy the occasion. As you've touched on, I think watching these tours before on TV, the amount of fun it looks, the playing in front of a West Indies crowd, they always talk about it being a party here, really, and playing in front of the West Indies. And I can't wait for Saturday, whether I'm bib on or whether I'm out in the middle, to just take it all in, just sit there and look around the ground and witness firsthand what it's like to be out here. And yeah, I can't wait to hear the noise and hear the roars and hear everything that Barbados will have to offer. I think that it's so exciting for me to be a part of.
David, thank you so much for your time. Really enjoy the series. Enjoy the sunshine as well. It's been fantastic to talk to you. And thanks for getting the Wi-Fi sorted.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Cheers, David. All the best, Matt. I'll catch you over the next few days.
We'll hear more from Owen Morgan now. He doesn't always strike you as somebody who's interested in creating and leaving behind a legacy. Perhaps he just knows that he already has, actually, the rebuilding of England's ODI team. But this was him talking to Scott Taylor a couple of days ago, discussing that exact subject.
Oh, I'm unbelievably proud, particularly when we have young guys who are predominantly county cricketers, are playing in two or three franchise tournaments during our winter season, making mistakes, learning more, experiencing more, and even to the extent now where they're massively sought after because they're match winners. So guys like Ben Duckett, Joe Clark have gone down to Australia, played really, really well, put on a show and haven't necessarily had the international exposure that they might have done in a different generation of English cricket. But I'm incredibly proud not only of that, but the level of expectation that this current team of players and group of players has lifted the level of expectation around going into world tournaments and winning. For the majority of my career, white ball cricket was an afterthought. And 95% of the time was spent around planning and prep for test match cricket. And then when we got to a World Cup, it was like, well, if we do well, great. If we don't, it's fine. But I think the skill level that guys are producing now on a consistent basis, and proven over long periods of time, rightly so, we're considered one of the best in the world. And trust me, I'd much rather be considered that than an afterthought. So all the credit has to go to the group of players at the moment. They have built what I think is something special as a group, and hopefully it builds further towards the future as well.
Yeah, let's talk about the future then finally. I appreciate your time. You've got plenty of ICC events coming up. I think one every year coming up in the near future. So there's a lot of people that say, well, you've won the T20 World Cup, you've won the 50 over World Cup. What keeps that drive going in Owen Morgan to go and achieve more?
Yeah, here it's a drive to want to leave the team in a far better place, with the ambition of them continuing to get better down the line. I've really enjoyed playing with this group. I've loved captaining. And at this particular time in my career, I couldn't be having a better time. Turning up to a World Cup as either favourites or joint favourites or, you know, real strong contenders is something that excites me, because the drive to want to fulfil that level of expectation is something that I haven't had a lot in my career, but over the last 6 years, it has been a constant. And it's something that I always think about, because it makes me think about what can we change to get better, or how can we become more consistent as a side. So until that stops, yeah, I think things are good.
Yeah, England captain Owen Morgan there, he doesn't strike me as somebody who has an interest in creating a place for himself in the history of the game. I mean, he's not like that. I think he just wants to win. He is aware that he is credited, and rightly, with the complete rebuild from 2015. And it was interesting, Harmy, because after the 2019 World Cup, he did give himself a couple of weeks or even a month or two. He wouldn't commit himself to carrying on. He wanted to see whether he still had the passion and the drive and the hunger. He discovered that he did. And now he's again, seems like a man on a mission.
Yeah, it is. And it's great for English cricket. I know there's a lot made and documented what he said in the last week. But I can see some of the stuff he was trying to say. You can't blame the 100 for England's test failures, because it's, you know, technically it's been going 1 year when the others have been going three or four. But I think he was missing the point, and he wasn't reading the room right, that the question was about, is the 100 going to get in the way? That time will tell on that one. You're leaving the legacy. I think somebody like Owen Morgan, I don't think he probably worries about that. Things like that are you look at when you're finished. So I think the legacy he's left, or he will be leaving when he does go, I think is plain for everybody to see what a fantastic achievement that he has done in transforming the mindset of English white ball cricketers into not picking, just getting picked in one day cricket off the back of good test matches. Actually, they've actually nearly gone the other way. They've nearly gone picking test match players off the back of how well they've done in white ball format. And that's another feather in Owen's cap. I think he's achieved so much as a leader of English cricket that I don't think he needs to worry about his own legacy. I think it's there for him. It's already set in stone for him, and he's got that. And I thought he was right when he said in 2019, I'm just going to take a couple of weeks, because he could have made a rash decision then off the elation of winning the World Cup, you know, how tight a game it was, you know, going into the Super Over. He could have, in 2 days, 3 days, completely made a mess of his next chapter of his life, because he could have said, right, I'm retiring. And if he retired, he might have been on the broadcasting booth now. He might have been in a coaching booth now. But he's still got a lot to offer, not just from an English cricket point of view, but from Owen Morgan's point of view as well, as a player, as a captain, as a leader. And somebody who retired at 35, I would love to have played on until I was in my late 30s. Like one or two other people, because there's no substitute for playing. And I think because he gave himself 2 weeks, I don't think it was a difficult decision. I think he was just buying some time off the elation of winning the World Cup. So I'm pleased he did do that. How long has he got? I think he's probably got another year or two left in him. The shorter format, the franchise cricket, the leadership qualities. I still think there's a lot of cricket left in Owen Morgan. And again, you look at some of our greatest cricketers of all time, they've gone on to play into their late 30s because they've got good values of the game, understanding of their own game, and the dedication to work hard. And I'm thinking the likes of Morgan, and I'm thinking the likes of Cook and
Alistair Cook and Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad, like Joe Root will do that as well. I think that the mindset that these guys have is great for English cricket.
Morgan has said on a number of occasions that he wouldn't be afraid to drop himself if he was captain of the squad, that if he felt that he wasn't in the best 11 at that time, at that moment for a particular game, he has no qualms about dropping himself. Do you think that situation... Well, first of all, do you think he meant that? And do you think that situation might arise? I mean, if he's still in charge going into the 2023 50-over World Cup, England defending their title, he'd be 37. Do you think that scenario ever might arise?
Possibly. It wouldn't surprise me with what Owen Morgan does, because he's a deep thinker. When people look at him, and I've had this conversation many times, and and I got it, talking a little bit with Kevin Peterson, that when people did criticise Owen Morgan for not getting the volume of runs that he was getting, we were like, hold on, he saves 15 runs in the field, 20 runs in the field by his captaincy, by his bowling changes, by keeping the likes of Adil Rashid late on. People shouting, why are you not bowling Rashid? We the game, we need a wicket. And it's like, well, you take the game as deep as you possibly can, and then you bring your trump card in. That's the art of a good captain. That's the art of somebody that knows what he's doing. So for me, if Owen Morgan averages 35 between now or 32 between now and the T20 World Cup, beyond that, and the World Cup in 2023, I wouldn't have a problem with him being in the side, because I think you can add 15 runs to that because of the art of captaincy that he has. Bowling changing decisions, his field positions, his ability to stay calm in any situation, for me, saves a lot of runs in the field. And that is valuable. So, yes, I think he probably did mean it, if he felt as though the next cab off the rank that was coming in, knocking on the door, was just too big to ignore. But I'd also urge anybody that watches scorecards and looks at games and thinks, Owen Morgan's only got 30, he's only got 40, he's only got 25, add 15 to it, because for me, the captaincy of Owen Morgan adds 15 runs to you in the field every single time that guy goes on the field leading this England team.
And your final thoughts on the series? It's in the background of 15 or 16, or was it even 17 England players playing in the Big Bash? And, I think there's another 15 or 16 being signed up in the Pakistan Super League. In fact, you look at every domestic league and there are Englishmen playing in it. Is that part of Owen Morgan's legacy? And are these five matches coming up another opportunity for, well, I was going to say Phil Salt, but I mean, he's already playing in two or three other domestic leagues. English white ball cricket's never been as strong or had as much depth. We know that. Can it get stronger and even deeper?
I think it can get stronger and deeper because these franchise leagues now are getting, there's more value in them. I think the county contract's not as strong as what it used to be. In the last sort of 20 years, the county contract was a one that everybody went to around the world. 18 first-class counties had two overseas players of high quality. My first overseas player was David Boone. I played with the likes of Shivnarine Chanderpaul, Mike Hussey, Shoaib Akhtar, some fantastic players. But that's not there anymore. That county contract for an overseas player is not as valued as what it used to be because of the franchise leagues around the world. And it's a good thing for what Owen Morgan, and I think as well as we've not got to forget what Sir Andrew Strauss did. He was alongside Morgan and putting this white ball program together. We need it for the red ball to move forward going into the next sort of 10 years. But I think because of what this white ball team can do, we are getting a lot of players playing franchise cricket around the world, and it can only benefit. And my club has just got another one. I think young Potts has gone to Lahore. Matthew Potts from Durham, who did fantastically well in the 100 last year. That is an unbelievable achievement for that young man, because a lad who's worked so hard to get himself in a position to play county cricket at Durham is now going to play in an international franchise on the other side of the world and experience that. He's going to come back a better player. And that's what we want. We want them to go away and come back better players, because it'll improve our county system, it'll improve our domestic system, but also when they come back and play international cricket, there'll be better players for sampling, other dressing rooms and other grounds around the world.
Thank you very much, Harmy. Enjoy Barbados. Enjoy the sunshine. Go easy on the rum. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And you can hear all the five T20s between England and the West Indies live and exclusive here on TalkSport 2 with the build-up starting at 7 p.m. this Saturday evening. If you've missed any of this show or you wish to catch up, you can, as always, download the podcast from the following on feed, available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back in our usual slot on Tuesday to look back at the first two T20s and discuss the other of the week's biggest stories. But for now, this has been a special edition of the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.